Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Specs on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Monday on the usual suspects, and I'm very, very curious, as I tell you that we're all present and accounted for. If you are a Texans fan, oh, and we know you are you on or off the bandwagon? Because we've experienced, after tough losses, everybody jumping off. We've experienced enough anger where they weren't jumping back on because they beat the Colts or the Patriots. And then they were like, I told you so, when they lost to the Broncos. But a big one in Tennessee, they get the win. Interested to see where the suspects are on this one.
It's the same pattern all year, right? Lose one, win two. They even pointed it out on the broadcast.
Well, because
we've been talking about it for
Twitter
a while now. But yeah, I knew they would win.
I did too.
No, I didn't.
I did. I told everybody, even Saturday I was playing hoops, and the guys were like, what do you think? I said, I feel something about the Texans on the road. I feel like in this kind of situation that Deshaun's going to step up, and I think they're going to win. They're like, oh, man, you're nuts. And they were all betting on it. I was like, okay.
Well, how could you know with the performance after Denver? And I'm not discrediting you. It's they're so wishy-washy. This team is – I can't figure them out. Just when they beat the Colts and the Patriots, and it's like, all right, I'm prepared to say this is a good football team, because those were two good wins for this team. And then they go out and lay an egg against Denver, and you're like, yep, well, back to not knowing what the hell this team is. And then they go out, and this is a good win for them.
It really was another good win. And I just feel like all season long that they've played more consistently and better football on the road than they have at home. Yes, they beat New England and Indianapolis at home, and especially the Indy game. It wasn't anything special. But when you think about their big wins and the fact that they went to Kansas City and the fact that when they were on the road, they just seemed like, I don't know if it's just getting away from all the distractions of Houston and everything like that, whatever. I just felt like on the road they were going to play well. And look, let's be honest too. That wasn't a great football game. That was whoever made the lesser of all the mistakes and the screw-ups was probably going to win, and that's what happened.
Yeah, there was a lot of luck involved in winning that game. And, you know, sometimes you need that. But interceptions that didn't turn into points, and interceptions that should have been points, and blocked field goals, and there was it definitely wasn't pretty. But at the end of the day, win's a win, and they got it done. And I tell you, there was a lot of stuff to talk about in this game. But late last night, I happened upon a stat because I was looking at the box score. I couldn't sleep. I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm looking at the box score. And I realized that Deshaun was only sacked one time in the game for 9 yards. And then I thought, okay, we haven't talked in a while about this team and the sacks and them giving up a lot of sacks. And I thought, I wonder where they rank in the NFL amongst teams as far as sacks given up offensively. So they are 11th in sacks allowed at 40. They are 15th in QB hits at 78. Last year, they finished the season with 62 sacks and 126 QB hits. This is a major improvement, and it's something that doesn't get discussed anymore. And now, granted, Watson has his times, like in Denver when he held onto the ball too long, and that was part of the issue.
Baltimore, too?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, they're 11th in sacks allowed. Who would have thought that offensive line, 15th in QB hits? It's a big deal, and I think that's part of the success that you've seen, is that they managed to correct that. It's not great, but it's better.
Way better.
It's
right.
way better. Yeah, it's way major better. Progress.
Remember, all of last year and into this year, we said it's one thing to be average. It's another thing to be what the Texans are, which was way below average.
Right.
So the fact that they've even gotten to this point, means that that kind of progress can really mean a lot to this team. And the funny thing to me is when you listen to the national pundits talk about this game and then talk about the Texans, and the last guy that I heard do it was Dan Orlovsky, who started talking about the Texans going, boy, if there's a team I don't want to play in the playoffs, it would be Houston. Because, I mean, their back end, their secondary, with as good as they're playing and the fact that they can get – I'm like, wait, time out. You don't watch this team on a daily basis, on a week-in, week-out basis. Right. So I think that's funny. But I think that when you get a guy like Hyde to carry the ball with that kind of anger, that running downhill anger that he's carried for, and people don't – look, at the start of the year, if I'd have told you they're going to have a running back that's going to rush for over 1,000 yards when you lose Lamar Miller,
yeah,
people are going to say you're out of your mind.
Pumped about that.
And the fact that you basically got him off the scrap heap, and he provided balance, and he ran hard, and he did everything you needed him to do, you're like – man, I don't know next year if you need Lamar Miller back. To me, Lamar Miller is someone they've moved on from already because you just re-signed Carlos Hyde. You're like, you got a guy that fits this system, that runs the ball the way they want him to run the football, and he doesn't have to, like, demand it and whine when he doesn't get it. But when he does, and that correlates to what you're talking about with the offensive line, and they block just a little bit, good things happen for this football team.
Well, you don't have to worry about Lamar Miller coming back. This is the last year of his contract.
I know it was, but I'm saying they, you know, the Texans kind of thing to do is loyal guy will consider bringing him back. Nah.
Nah, they won't do that, especially because he's getting older. But, yeah, Carlos Hyde is earning the opportunity to get another contract with this team, mm-hmm. at least for a couple more years. Yeah, it was a weird game. I mean, I thought DeAndre Hopkins showed up real big. Will Fuller made a difference, obviously.
Yep.
Because then they talked about it all ad nauseum about, man, when these three are on the field, Hopkins, Fuller, and Stills. Good luck. Pick your poison, really.
Yeah, really?
You know you got to double DeAndre Hopkins. That leaves you probably with one-on-one coverage with either Fuller or Stills. Both of them can take the lid off the defense.
Your back end safety has to prepare for Fuller to go yeah, deep.
It's a different dynamic completely. And again, if you notice with it, the way this offense continues to evolve and change, and literally from week to week, we haven't heard from the tight ends in a couple of weeks, but they've been wide receiver heavy. They've been able to run the ball a little bit here and there. So I'm impressed with the fact that even though they laid an egg against Denver and I didn't think that this game was going to go well for them, they won it on the road against the division rivals. That's a big win. But I've been impressed with the way that Bill O'Brien has rallied the troops, you know, after some losses and continued to evolve this offense.
Okay.
I mean, well, you don't.
I mean, I'm not going to give. I'm just not at a point yet where I'm going to give Bill O'Brien the credit like that. But I'll say, look, you know what? At this point in the season, I think it already should have been to a standpoint where we didn't have to say that it's continuing to evolve. It should already have been established and continue to be established. And that's why you've had some of the slip-ups too. But I think the takeaway for me was, look, to your point about having those three guys, when they're all on the field, that's what to me makes the difference in this team being decent or having slip-ups like Denver and being a team that playoff teams have to worry about, because you already know that you've got your franchise quarterback that steps up in big-time moments and loves those big-time games. When he has the full complement of weapons, when he's got a halfback he can give the ball to and go, you know, he's going to get me 4 yards a carry. And better yet, like you said, and when the defense has to kind of scramble and adjust because you've got three guys now that you don't have to worry about fumbling and drops and anything else, and the fact that they're versatile enough, especially with Stills, he can play inside, outside. Those three guys in itself and with a running game, and like you said, tight ends that are there and capable, that's where you have to start fearing this team. Because all season long...
And you're not going to give Bill O'Brien credit for that.
No, because you know
what? All the things you just listed.
Because you know why? Because at the same time, the tight ends shouldn't have disappeared the last couple weeks. Tight ends should still have been being utilized. If it works, don't go completely away. Now, if teams overplan game plan and scheme for them, sure, then you can go away a little bit. But still, if it's working for you, I would still continue to have tapped into that, and maybe you wouldn't have had a slip up against Denver if you'd used other things.
Well, Denver, I felt like defensively they got let down.
I think it was overall an
atrocious game defensively. This team is seventh in yards per game and tenth in scoring.
But that's why I put it on the coaching staff, Barry. A coaching staff knows the trap game and knows, hey, look. And even if you can feel it and sense it before, but if you know what's happening during the game, there's things you do say and activate within your game plan to make sure that you stop it instead of just letting it steamroll full force and let you get embarrassed. So that's why I'm not as quick to give Bill O'Brien the credit. I get what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, preparation and just – I mean, this offense continues to evolve. Mm-hmm. And they continue, I think, to try different things. And that's what I'm saying is – give him credit for continuing to, all right, no Will Fuller, let's try something different. They were basically down to D-Hop and sometimes Kenny Stills. They get the tight ends more involved. They get Fuller back. You don't need the tight ends. You work the deep passing game more. There's just a lot. And I think a lot of this, though, the credit that we don't give is this offensive line.
For sure.
The running game is definitely an offensive line thing. The fact that Deshaun Watson isn't leading the league in sacks and QB hits is an offensive line thing, along with his play as well. But it's a duo. It's both.
That's what I was alluding to. Look, I'll give the offensive line all the credit in the world because it's one thing to say the sacks and the hits are way down, but the other thing is to say not only are they blocking during the running game for Hyde to get 1,000 yards on the season, but they're blocking to give him enough time to distribute the football wherever it should go. I just think that, you know, some of the horrendous third down plays still, or when they go for it on fourth down, things like that. Don't forget about your tight ends. Don't forget about things that have worked just because it changes from week to week. Those are the kind of things that annoy me. And look, as good as Watson's been, let's not sugarcoat the fact that he got away with a few yesterday, too. Those picks could have been really, really devastating, and they were able to dodge some bullets.
Yeah, that's a good point. He was a little careless with the ball. You want to see him, make better decisions, but that's just, he's kind of been that way. He's got a little Brett Favre in him. He's kind of a gunslinger a little bit.
I'll give you that. But the thing, the thing is that the game changer was the first drive for Tennessee. I mean, if they don't make that play, if Reed doesn't make that hit and they don't turn that into a turnover and go the other way, now we might talk about a totally different ball game in terms of tempo and momentum and all those different things.
Yeah, I mean, same thing. You're talking about the interception?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was huge.
The Reed hit and it popped up and they picked it off and went the other way. So we got plenty to talk about on this game, and I'm sure you guys do too. But I'd really be curious, are you back on the bandwagon now it looks like they should win the division? Are you still off because your feelings have been hurt too many times and you're heartbroken? We're going to continue to talk throughout the next 3 hours about Texans and other things. HR&P listener line if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. Call that number. Text that number. Hit us on Twitter where it's at Barry is Funny, at The Producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, you're always a big part of what we do here on The Usual Suspects. Before we go to the break, I do want to remind you that, look, holiday season's around the corner, but there's still time and you might be planning out an office Christmas party or a get-together with neighbors or friends before the holidays get to be too deep. Well, Twin Peaks is the ultimate sports lodge, and it's got a great menu to match. You can combine any of their made-from-scratch menu items with frosty 29-degree draft beers served by the beautiful Twin Peaks girls, and you're in for a legendary sports-watching experience or a holiday party. And if you can believe it, the holiday is just around the corner. It doesn't get easier and more festive than Twin Peaks. 5 area Houston locations. You book with them and you add some scratch food, booze, and scenic views to your holiday party. It's the perfect ambiance and atmosphere, whether you're watching sports or just want to get out of the house, hang out with your friends, and have everything taken care of so you don't have to worry about a thing. All you got to do is contact your favorite Twin Peaks for more information. It's twinpeaksrestaurant.com, and Twin Peaks will take care of the rest. As I tell you and keep telling you, and I'll remind you until I'm blue in the face, it's eats, it's drinks, it's scenic views. It's got to be Twin Peaks.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Second segment of the show. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a Monday in the big city. Always better after a win for your favorite football team as your Houston Texans look to be in the driver's seat now to take care of that powerhouse AFC South.
You know, you mentioned people saying like, oh, I wouldn't want to play this team. They actually, I think somebody else on the broadcast said that. Listen, love the Texans. They're my team. Glad they won. They don't scare me in the playoffs.
Okay, so here's the way I look at that. I agree with you if it's just looking at the Texans as a whole, but they should scare you offensively. I don't think they scare you as a team as a whole, right? But I think that when you make the comparison to that later in the day on your favorite show with Stephen A.
Bit Down?
Yeah. They said, who do you fear more of the two teams, Tennessee or Houston? And I just thought Pat McAfee and these guys were just pandering to say that they fear Tennessee because of Derrick Henry and ball control. I mean, get out of here. Look, I mean, if you're going to face a team that has Deshaun Watson and a full complement of receivers, and it looks like they're capable of running the football and their offensive line is steady, that's a team that offensively can stay with you in a game, regardless of anything else. And if one turnover goes the wrong way, you could be in a world of hurt, as opposed to putting the ball in the hands of Tennessee and saying, now you've got to beat us. Yeah, Tannehill got some yards and everything yesterday, but Tannehill, as good as he's been, I just don't think on a big stage, when you're looking for consistency and a big play every now and then, scares me anywhere close to Deshaun Watson.
I'm with you. Offensively, Houston would scare me more. Defensively, Tennessee would scare me more. And I think if the Texans secondary can continue to gel and figure it out and get better, that'll give them more of a defensive presence to be fearful of. But right now, it's not there.
Big thing, and though, is the pass rush that's been non-existent.
Well, and I was going to say that, you know, some of that is the secondary, but, you know, there's discussion. I just saw another article. Texans not ruling out J.J. Watt returning, and I don't want to get the fans' hopes up because, remember, he's going to be gassed. He's not in shape. There's a lot that goes into being ready to play football. Don't expect him to perform at the level he was when he went out.
Right.
But even having to account for him on the field is going to free up some other people. Now you got to double team him no matter what.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think defenses can just assume he's not going to be in game shape and he's not going to be able to do what he once could do. So they're probably going to double team him. So then your defense can do more things schematically, assuming that they're going to have some more freedom on the other side. I don't know how much that helps, simply because of, like we said, the pass rush has been non-existent, yep, which has put more pressure on your secondary. But if there's a way to which your front seven can be a little bit more effective and maybe take a second off of how much time that the defensive backs have to stay with receivers and all that, then that helps them. But you're right. I think defensively, if you're comparing the two teams, I think Tennessee head and shoulders is above Houston. But I think offensively, I would say the same the other way. Yeah, they got some big young receivers in Tennessee. But I think overall, with the combination of the skill positions from tight end, wide receiver, running back, and the quarterback position, I just think it's head and shoulders Houston over Tennessee.
I would agree. I wouldn't say head and shoulders from the running perspective.
No, not with Derrick Henry. Of course not. But I'm just saying, if you're looking for a team that
wide receiver,
you'd be worried about playing in the playoffs.
I'd rather have Tennessee's offensive line.
Okay. But like you said, as long as you're middle of the road with all those weapons, I think that because defenses have to be on their toes to be like, hey, you know what? Everybody's fair game. He could dump down to a tight end who's capable of running a route and making a play. You know, they could go RPO. Or, you know, just flat out, if you look at in succession of the way throughout the game, they went to Stills early. Then they started to get, you know, Will Fuller involved a little bit. And then, you know, as much as DeAndre was having two guys around him most of the day, whenever they need a big play, whether it's a third down play or late in the game on those drives, when they needed to know that whoever they threw it to, they don't have to worry about a drop. They don't have to worry about in traffic. Anything and everything, you go to him because you know he's the guy that's going to shut the door. And he did.
Yeah.
You know, he just made big play after big play when they needed it.
Yeah, and I'm still surprised that you won't give Bill O'Brien credit for that, for the offense.
I'm so pissed off about the lack of coaching to do a job against Denver that I'm just not going to be quick to give Bill O'Brien credit on
something like that. But you keep pumping up offensively how scary this team is.
It is. It's scary on paper, Barry. And that's why I'm saying in the playoffs, if I had to scheme against them of the two teams and just to look at Houston coming at me offensively, sure, I'd be more worried about Houston. I'd be worried about Houston with all their weapons. But you know what would help me sleep better at night? Bill O'Brien's not going to use all those weapons. He's not going to use them effectively, and I don't know how he's going to motivate his team. Playoffs are different than a Denver game. The Denver game really pissed me off.
Yeah, it pissed a lot of people off, and rightfully so. I feel like, too, Tennessee is one of those teams where they do the two things you have to do in the playoffs to be effective. You have to be able to control the ball by running it and be stout defensively. And that's the two things they do well. And I think that's why people make the case for them over the Texans. But this is kind of, to me, this feels like a new era of football. You can have a flashier offense and not just have to be ball control running the ball. So, I mean, I'm with you in that. I think offensively the Texans would scare me more. Defensively, Tennessee would scare me more. But they do have a good balance in what it takes old school wise to compete in the playoffs.
I thought you were going to say a new era of Bill O'Brien football. I'm like, I'm not turning the page on a guy that's done the same old thing over and over again.
I'm talking about a new era of playoff football where the KCs of the world with a flashy offense and a mediocre to subpar defense can still make waves and do some things.
But there's a name that I'm not going to use because I don't know if I can say it on the air, but he is the ultimate blue objects coach in all of the league.
Did you say blue balls?
Well, there you go.
We'll find out, I guess.
I guess so, right? That's why there you go. But that's,
I don't understand
that's
why you
what,
couldn't.
That's what his coaching and his everything has been to me, because he leads everybody to believe, it leads you right to the promised land, gets you right there, and then just goes, nope, today we're going to lose by 30.
Well, it's funny because they were talking about the pattern on, we've been bringing up, win, lose one, win two.
Right.
If they continue that, which it's very possible that they do, because they've got the game against Tampa, and then they've got their final game against the Titans. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible that they win against Tampa, lose against the Titans. That would continue the lose one, win two. But if that carries into the playoffs, baby, deep run time, yeah. That means they win their wild card round.
You got to beat Buffalo.
Yeah,
at home.
Suck it, Buffalo.
There's a lot of people already telling you. There's one guy last week that called us to tell us, believe me, mark it down. If Buffalo comes to Houston, it's just going to be dragging the Texans
that
through the
guy's
mud.
That guy's a dummy.
You're just in a time in the season right now when a team gets a win late in the season, everybody talks about how they could possibly get hot at the right time. So I think that's part of the reason why. I saw some idiot on the NFL Network talk about how the Cowboys might be, you know, getting hot at the right time, and might even win the Super Bowl. This was said on the NFL Network.
Oh, my God.
So
oh
this time, every win feels way better than pretty much any other win, especially if you're still in contention.
I mean, but look, Nick, that's right, because there's a track record that says almost more than anywhere else in sports, when the hot team in the NFL at the right time, wild card teams have won the Super Bowl with the Giants, the Packers. They've made deep runs before, because you're right. When they get hot and they get clicking, there's something to be said about that, more so in the NFL than other leagues. But at the same time, if you're playing against a quality football team on the other side and they have that combination of offense, defense, special teams, they're going to shut down what's brought to the table in those situations if you're talking about the Texans.
But the kind of teams that do that are the Seattle wildcard teams, the San Francisco wildcard teams, not a 7-7 Dallas team.
From a Dallas perspective, look, the biggest thing to me is, and again, just the way I said about Bill O'Brien, I'm not giving them any credit. I'm not going to put any fear of heart and fear of God into my heart because of Jason Garrett. Because look, on paper, that team is talented in all facets of the game. They've got more talent sitting there wasting away with the way they play than any team that you might say is a wild card team might be scary to you. But just, again, you talk about inconsistent. That's a team that lost to the Jets. That's a team that hadn't beat a team with a winning record all year. And because they beat the Rams, everybody should go, ooh, okay. Well, there you have it. First half hour of the show. We're going to continue to roll on. And, of course, we'd love for you to join us. Let us know what you think. Cowboys, Texans, Rockets, whatever you got on your mind. We got plenty to get to today. And, of course, if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, you can join it and throw it out there for the program. HR&P Listener Line, 713-780-3776. Call that number, text that number, or hit us on Twitter. Second half hour right around the corner, right here on ESPN 90.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Going to be on Tennessee.
Well, they're getting one-on-one. Now's your chance to take advantage.
Goes for it. Back to Stills. He's got his second touchdown catch of the quarter.
Threw when we needed to. Outside of those two dumb picks by me, which Rob would tighten up, we definitely played some good, smart football.
There you go. A little bit of the broadcast, CBS, with Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. And, of course, quotes after the game, Deshaun Watson, who, say what you will, and obviously we said, you know, a little loose with the ball and some turnovers that could have been costly. But the fact that he owns everything he does is just a trait that I really appreciate, because a lot of guys would make excuses and say, oh, we had some breakdowns or whatever like that. And we've seen this throughout the season. That's one thing that has been consistent, is when he's good, he's humble. When he's bad, he consistently takes the blame and says, puts it on his shoulders and knows he's got to do better.
I couldn't agree more. It's one of those things where you want to root for a guy like that on the field and off the field, and he makes it easy to do that. He's, you know, when he does win, he has a good time. He's still young enough to enjoy the game. But then he says the right things post game. And that's, you know, we know it's all crock. We know when you hear certain things, you're like, okay, that's just player speak or coaches speak.
Right.
But you still want to hear it. For some reason, it's just comfortable for us to hear a guy go, yeah, I got to clean up those picks and do better, but credit to the offensive line and blah, 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 blah. And you're like, okay, that's just soothing to hear as a fan. So.
Yeah, because I think for them, when you're in their position, they're very tempted to talk about the things that are not their fault.
The reality, yeah.
You know, the things that didn't go wrong or that went wrong, but not because of him.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, and it tells you a lot about the player and his makeup. If he's able to accept blame, shoulder the blame, and say he's working on it, as opposed to, and look, Aaron Rodgers is guilty of this a lot more recently than over the course of his career. But when you start selling out guys for routes, when it's visible even on the field that you're doing it there as well as in front of the media, that's a character flaw that can tell you a lot about what you actually have in terms of your quarterback or whatever position it may be. And in this case, you've got a guy that cares, that owns it, that downplays how when he plays good, but accepts blame when he plays bad, and that's huge. You guys have waited a long, long time to get this franchise quarterback. It's just good to know that when you finally got him, you got the real deal. Because, Look, I look at the Rams and the team that played the Cowboys yesterday, and I'll tell you, a guy that seems to be a false front in terms of he got the money, he got rewarded for one season, but overall, would I really want Jared Goff leading my football team for the next 10 years? I'd say no. I just think that there was already question marks when we talk about how often McVay was in his ear up until the 15-second mark and making reads for him and trying to make suggestions on audibles. But whatever the case may be, whether he's in his ear or not, the performance on the field, to me, and just the way he handles it, looks like, man, if I'm the Rams, I'd be worried with that massive – two of them, by the way. Because then the other thing is you realize how much you're paying Todd Gurley to basically be an injury or a decoy.
How fast did they fall off, man?
Man, in 1 year's time, it's quickly, you blink your eyes and they are gone.
Yeah.
As opposed to a guy that you know is going to be here for the next up to 10 years, well, maybe more for your franchise in Deshaun Watson, and you love everything about him because he fits Houston.
Yep.
That's what I like.
I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, you look at their 8-6 now, the Rams are, and just not good.
They make so many mistakes. On ESPN, you know what they keep saying? That defense is just awful. And they're just so bad. And you're like, a year ago, people feared that defense.
Yeah.
Don't tell me it's because Ndamukong Suh's not there anymore, but you did trade away Marcus Peters.
Yeah.
You told Aqib Talib to go home, and then you traded him.
Yeah.
And you brought in Clay Matthews, who for a while there was playing really good and had a lot of sacks. He broke his jaw, unfortunately, and then it's just fallen off. But overall, a lot of the same personnel, but you're not getting nearly the accolades. People are going, God, I'm not scared of the Rams defense anymore.
Yeah, the descent has been swift from 1 year to the next. And, you know, you mentioned several times about the offense and how defense has figured out how to play them. And you talk about how, you know, defensively some of the changes that they've gone through, but you don't feel like it should affect them that much.
You know what I'm fearful? Wade Phillips.
Yeah.
Because when you got all that money, right, you traded for Marcus Peters. And not only did you trade for him, but now you're trying to trade other guys because you figure you're going to lock him up long term. So what do? What's your short term solution when you got long term contracts? You get rid of the coordinator. Wade's too good of a coordinator to have that just put on his shoulders. I mean, those are personnel decisions, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's some of it is coaching because, you know, we always talk about coaches get too much credit and not enough credit. Players have to play and they have to play at the same level. And I don't think that, like you said, even on the offensive side of the ball, they're just not living up to what they established themselves to be as their baseline last year. They're far below that. Now, you have to think, was last year the exception to what this team really is? Or was it just, did they set the bar too high? Or are they capable of that? And I feel like if you look at them individually, they are. But I mean, like you mentioned, Gurley and everybody seems to be just falling off at the same time. It's almost like the Falcons. They're reminding me of the Falcons in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, just got a huge win over the Niners.
Watch the end of it, yeah.
Crazy.
But, you know, to Nick's point about the hot team, you've got to capitalize, too, when you are that hot team, regardless of what seed you are and if you're the wild card or the division winner. Because on the flip side, and you just gave two perfect examples, but then throw in teams like the Niners, who had that dominating team for 2 or 3 years. But at the end of the day, when they never won it, and then that's when it changes, when it falls off, it's not like a gradual Tom Brady falling off. It's a cliff. It's a ledge. And you fall 18 stories just like that, and that's what they're looking at right now with the Rams. And God knows, because of those contracts, if they can crawl out from under it, and if they're going to throw big money at Marcus Peters. They already threw money at Aaron Donald. That's a whole lot of contracts to be worried about when you're trying to turn that thing around.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, I know that they're not mathematically eliminated.
Oh, they're about, they're done.
They're not catching the Vikings, right?
No.
I mean, Rams have the Niners and the Cardinals, so they probably split, go 1-1. The Vikings have the Packers and the Bears. They probably split going 1-1. What you need, though, is you've got to win both if you're the Rams, and the Vikings have to lose both to even have a chance to be in. I don't think that's happening.
No, I'm with you on that. I think it's pretty much a lock that you're going to see, you know, whichever team doesn't win the divisions either way, with Niners and Seahawks and Packers and Vikings.
Are the wild cards.
Yeah, they're the two wild cards, and you're done.
Yeah.
So the Rams are done. And then you got a whole lot of soul searching too. Because the other thing was, and this is how Matt LaFleur got his job in Green Bay and several other guys were being considered, is, hey, McVay is also that coaching tree that everybody wants to pluck from. Now, not only do they not want to pluck that those fruits, they're looking at him going, you're on the hot seat, bro. 1 year from being a hot commodity.
Do you think he's on the hot seat?
There's a lot of people that think he is.
I don't think he's on the hot seat.
I don't personally. Because, look, there's things you can control. As long as he's under contract, you got more to worry about contractually with players than you should be about trying to change coaching. But, again, we also look at, again, when I go back to Wade Phillips, you look at what things can be done to shake up a franchise when they can't get rid of players with long-term contracts, and the coach is someone you want to keep, coordinators are going to go. Look at Tom Herman at Texas.
Yeah.
When you can't get rid of the head coach and it's too soon, but you can't put them on a hot seat, guess what you do?
Let me give you an example, because I feel like these guys are very similar. But I liken Sean McVay to being another Mike Tomlin kind of guy. Different coaching styles, I get it. But young, innovative, good football guy, good locker room guy. Players want to play for him. Tomlin, after they won the Super Bowl, went 12-4 in 2008. They were 9-7 the next year. Rams most likely go 9-7 this year after their Super Bowl. So don't give up on him. I don't think he's on the hot seat.
I'm not giving up on him. I'm just saying that people are out there already pointing fingers and talking about a hot seat. But here's the difference between Tomlin, in my mind, and McVay, is Tomlin's a guy that likes being on the same page as the players, but he won't take any crap from them, and he will discipline them. To me, McVay seems like a guy that's so focused on being one of the guys that I haven't seen that discipline side, that tough decision-making side that he may have to face in the offseason.
Well, he hasn't had to yet. I think that's the difference. He hasn't had to yet. So we'll see if he does that, or if he tries to be more likable than be a head coach. But to me, they're very similar starts to how they were very impressive early on, how young they were, but how impressive they were and what they've done. So I think you give him time. And we'll see. Maybe just the fact of the matter is Jared Goff isn't the guy. And that could have a lot to do with it. And he did. Boy. He got the most he could out of him. And now what?
You talk about a general manager should be on a hot seat then, because they just gave him massive money and a long-term deal. If he's not the guy, you're in trouble.
That's who you got to blame. And you know who you got to blame if your spouse isn't happy this Christmas? Yourself. Because you probably didn't get her a hoodie footy from Pajamagram. If she's not happy, guys, I'm telling you, the holidays are around the corner. Get something that's a win-win for both of you. Get something that's going to make her feel hot and heat up your holidays at the same time. Of course I'm talking about the super warm, world-famous hoodie footy from our friends over at Pajamagram. It's hard to be hot when she's not. That is the saying. And look, I already got mine. I ordered Nora the varsity hoodie footy. I can't wait till it gets here. I'm not even going to make her wait till Christmas. As soon as it gets here, I'm going to let her have it, because it's getting cold and she's cold. And, you know, when she's cold, it's cold and I want her hot. You know what I'm saying? Guys, it's the ultimate Christmas solution for you. It combines the warmth of a hoodie and the coziness of footy pajamas. And look, right now, they're going to wrap it for you. You don't even have to do the work. They're going to wrap it for you when they send it to you. And speaking of sending it to you, delivery guaranteed by Christmas. Plus, it's backed with 100% lifetime guarantee. It is an absolute no-brainer. Do yourself a favor right now. Go log on to Pajamagram. And since they're celebrating their 10 years of hoodie footy goodness, they're going to give you $10 off an adult-sized hoodie footy. All you got to do is put in promo code SAVE10 when you check out. So do it right now. Go to Pajamagram.com. Use code SAVE10. That's Pajamagram.com. Code SAVE10. Tell them Barry sent you.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on the Usual Suspects, hour one, 3 hour show. We were talking about the Texans. We can talk about a lot of different things in the NFL. And we were talking about the hot team and how quickly teams fall off. Well, the other thing that we didn't talk about is the fact when you get a team that's anointed early without proving themselves or proving anything.
Packers?
No.
Oh.
Then things can go. By the way, we beat that team in Dallas.
Get them, Barry. Get them.
We've played some pretty good teams and beaten them this year. Don't get me started on Green Bay. I'm talking about Cleveland. I'm talking about a team that was the sexy pick to make the Super Bowl. I'm talking about teams that people were all over the place. I watched them self-destruct yesterday against an Arizona Cardinals team that shouldn't put fear in hearts of any team in this league and go, good Lord. Now they're wondering, will OBJ stay or go? I mean, the bigger question, and Barry, the thing that you were talking about with the whole Jared Goff thing and otherwise is, he's still on a rookie contract, but boy, I'll tell you what, after a pretty decent rookie year, Baker Mayfield could, as much as Freddie Kitchens is taking the blame and probably going to be gone, Baker Mayfield needs to shoulder a ton of blame.
Yeah, he's not good. He's looking like a Johnny Manziel 2.0 in a lot of ways. But we're just going to put a pin in the Wii. We'll come back to that.
Fine.
Put a pin there. Cleveland is a disaster.
Oh.
And I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I think it stops, though, at the GM. He did his job. He went out and got talent around a young core nucleus. And I think this starts at Freddie Kitchens and it ends with the players. You can't fire the team.
Who hired Freddie Kitchens? John Dorsey.
Okay.
So as much as I'm with you in giving him credit for getting the person.
That really hired him. He was there already, right?
Well, no, he was their quarterbacks coach at the start of the year when Dorsey got there. Then, if you remember, they fired Hugh Jackson.
Uh-huh.
They gave Greg Williams the interim head coaching position. They made that run with Greg Williams where they started to improve. They got the win. Then they started winning a little bit more. They started to give everybody hope under Greg Williams. And then he made the decision to let Greg Williams walk and to promote Freddie Kitchens again from quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator under Williams to the new head coach. And that's so,
but
as much as I'm with
system.
You personnel-wise giving Dorsey credit, I don't think in that situation, especially with some of the personalities you're talking about with Jarvis Landry and OBJ and some of those guys, I don't think Kitchens was the right decision. You needed a veteran, experienced guy, not a dictator per se, but a guy that has the respect of a locker room. And I don't think Freddie Kitchens had that.
You needed with a young nucleus like that and some issues with individual guys that brought issues with them like OBJ. You need, and Jarvis Andrew, you needed guys that, a head coach that can manage that, not a young guy that was barely going to be able to hold on to the locker room, it felt like. And I don't know if it's just he doesn't have the respect of his players. I don't know if this team was just overhyped, that they never gelled individually. There's a lot of things that you could say is the blame, but at the end of the day, they're just awful. And the one-year experiment already looks like
they're Cowboys AFC, right? All the talent in the world on paper.
I think they're worse than the Cowboys, to be honest.
They are, and record-wise they are too. But I'm just saying, in terms of an AFC version of the Cowboys with on paper all the talent in the world, and they just don't know how to put it all together and do what they do. And that's why I said when they were looking at a coach that Mike McCarthy would have been a perfect fit for a lot of reasons. One, he's got experience with Dorsey and all the Packer personnel that they hired. Two, if you're Baker Mayfield and you come into a room in which a guy has coached Aaron Rodgers with a reputation of knowing that Brett Favre came out of the same system and for all their success and they won a Super Bowl, you're like, I got to respect this guy.
Yep.
Veterans in the locker room go, this guy won on a consistent basis. I got to respect this guy. Freddie Kitchens, none of that.
I'm with you. I think he would be on my short list.
Yeah, and I think he probably will be. I think that's a guy that Cleveland will look to after a year.
But do you think he walks in and looks at that and goes, yeah, I can't win with that guy, at Baker Mayfield. I can't win with him.
That's where it's going to be, again, remember how we talk about even in the Dallas situation, before you take a job, you've got to have some real frank discussions about control.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the absolute first question that happens in that situation is John Dorsey brings in a coach. He sits him down. Baker Mayfield's our guy. Can you win with him? Nope.
Then
you're not going
to
get the job.
Then you're either, hey, thanks for coming in, or we got to look at what we can do to try to rectify
or
that.
It's, hey, can you win with Baker Mayfield? No. Okay. Do you want to go out and get a vet? Do you want to go out, you know, do we go get a Nick Foles because we think the Jags move on? Or
Cam Newton.
So let's figure that out. That's a discussion you have to have, and I think you give if a guy like Mike McCarthy the reins to say, no, we need to move on from Baker Mayfield, or yes, I can win with him.
And the other thing
would be, O'Brien did when he got here.
But the other thing, unlike Bill O'Brien, is whether, because McCarthy, the knock on him was he called the plays. That's what frustrated Rodgers and the receivers, that it was just so archaic that they never really got it open. They never really opened up the offense and got innovative and kind of current and now. So either he would have to hire, if you're Dorsey on the other side, go, okay, the way, just like we're talking about if you can win or not with Baker, I need to have a conversation with you about what if I get go out and get a different offensive coordinator and he calls the plays, not you.
Yeah.
Because that's something that became a real point of contention in Green Bay about the play calling and the types of plays and how old and outdated they were. That's where you got to have another discussion and go, on your point about Bill O'Brien is, look, you can get the job. And what you did as a head coach to organize from throwing the red flag and time management, all the things we talk about with Bill O'Brien. But because of what happened late in the Green Bay, or for whatever reason, I would feel more comfortable if we got a very established offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. So, you feel like, though, with a young quarterback and Cleveland feels like a young team, you just wonder, bringing in an old school coach like that, does it backfire? Do you try to go out and get a Lincoln Riley and just throw –
but again, now money at him, about a hand guy over fist. That doesn't have the authority of the locker room. And from a veteran perspective, an OBJ or guys like that are going to come in and go, hey, bro, you did this in college with college kids. This is the NFL now. And you don't talk to me that way. You don't do that to me.
But look what Arizona did, right? They had a quarterback. They went out and got Cliff Kingsbury. And he was like, nope, this is who I want. This is how we're going to do it. And they made the changes and they went with it. So maybe that's why you bring in a Lincoln Riley, because he comes in and says, I can get down with OBJ and Jarvis Landry, not with Baker Mayfield. Let me bring in my guy. We'll bring in, you know, we'll go get a Joe Burrow, or we'll go do whatever. I mean, not a Joe Burrow, but, you know, somebody in the middle of the draft, a Tua, you know.
But they've given away all their picks. I mean, yeah, they traded them all away to get the guys that they got, too.
That's
so
true.
That's not what something that's going to be an option. Their picks are limited because of the fact that they traded for OBJ. And so they gave up a lot to get him. That's why I'm saying, when you look at it, and McCarthy's not archaic in terms of a veteran. You know, he still was in a modern era of football where he was doing some things offensively. But he's, you know, he's not Bill Parcells, but he's not Sean McVay.
No, they have their own first-round pick in 2020. They have their own second, their own third, plus the Texans conditional for Duke Johnson.
What were the picks that they gave up for OBJ?
They've got a fourth, no fifth-round pick. They've got the Cardinals pick in the sixth and their own, plus a Bills pick in the seventh. So they got a full complement.
That's crazy.
They could absolutely, especially with their record.
I thought they gave up picks for OBJ and otherwise.
Especially with their record, they could absolutely, you know.
They did get picks for OBJ. They probably just still had that pick.
They had stockpiled a ton.
Yeah.
Like, remember, they got several picks from the Texans for a Brock when they took on him. And so they had stockpiled a bunch. And they went out and got veterans with them.
I was going to say, because if you're a coach that's available this year, I mean, the difference is, look, the cupboard is stocked in Dallas. The cupboard is stocked in Cleveland. Because when you look at it, you got to re-sign Kareem Hunt. But you have Kareem Hunt and Chubb in the backfield. You've got those two studs at wide receiver. You've got, it was Njoku at tight end. You've got a decent offensive line. You got studs on the defense, assuming Myles Garrett comes back and all the different guys they've added on the defense side of the football, too. That's a roster laden with talent. It shouldn't be that hard if you're a coach to say, look, I've seen a lot worse. I've seen what happened in Miami. I've seen the Cincinnati job and what he's dealing with now once he took that. So Dallas and Cleveland are going to be very sought-after jobs by guys. The only difference is, from a Dallas perspective, is your owner is the general manager, is a guy that's hungry for the spotlight, is going to say and do a lot of things, that's going to get under your skin in a hurry, and you don't know about decision-making.
Maybe that's just too much personality at one time for a first-time head coach. You go on a team, and you've got guys like Baker Mayfield and OBJ. Maybe if it was a situation where he had an opportunity to work with Baker for a little bit, then you add some of these animated personalities on the roster one at a time. I don't know. I just feel like that's a lot to deal with. Whether that locker room culture is bad or not, at the very minimum, you can describe it as dramatic.
But don't you guys feel like, too, if it was a Kyler Murray at quarterback there, and for all the mistakes that were being made, he just, again, what we talk about this with Deshaun Watson, he would own them. He would say, I got to get better. But a lot of this is Baker's mouth. Because there's a lot of people that almost want to see them fail, because every time something goes wrong, Baker throws gas on the fire and makes it even worse. He talks too much. He says the wrong things. He throws his training staff under the bus. He throws players under the bus. He talks about players' contracts.
But you knew you were getting that when you drafted him. You knew that that was
Did
part
you?
Of it. He had that fiery personality. He was flamboyant a little bit. He was out there. He was,
he was crazy.
You knew he was a flamboyant personality, but you also didn't expect that when he made the transition to the NFL with a veteran locker room and everything else, and you realized it's a business, that somehow, some way, someone didn't grab him by the collar and go, bro, you don't do these things when you're in the NFL. You don't talk bad about players and personnel and things like that. And he just ran roughshod. And you didn't have a coach that could control him.
I mean, sometimes your organization is just dysfunctional. And the Browns have been dysfunctional for a very long time.
But you just gave credit to Dorsey.
Yeah, I gave credit to Dorsey. But that doesn't fix everything in one fell swoop. And if you bring in the wrong guy to try to help correct the issues that you have as an organization, it doesn't help. You know, if you
that's
bring
what I said, that's
if
the Dorsey, Browns, though. He brought him in.
But I'm saying you bring in Baker Mayfield because he was the right pick at the right time, though. It just from an on the field perspective, he was the right pick at the right time.
You had other options. Remember now, because we had said it. Some people thought, and you were right about saying he was going to be a top 10 pick. I don't think anybody
He'd go first.
And he went number one, but there were other options you could have had that you knew you weren't dealing with that
Who
either.
Who else was in that draft? I forget.
Well, I think Josh Allen was in that draft.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of all the different quarterbacks, but there were quarterbacks that you could to be had instead of Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, but I just don't know that was kind of the consensus. Like, everyone figured that was the guy.
And Josh Allen wasn't the hot top in terms of guys available in that draft. I just knew, you know, that's a name that came to mind in terms of other young guys that didn't have kind of that worry or question mark about him. Dorsey, like you said, Dorsey was a guy that was just dead set on this was the number one pick in the draft, and he did have other options. So that's my only point. Dorsey also, he brought in Baker. He hired Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah, but you weren't going to tank any of those other. You might move down and get one, but
you
the
had
option
two picks
was either
in that draft. Remember,
yeah,
you had one and what, and then they took the cornerback from Ohio State at what, 4 or 5.
I'm trying to get this to come up. It's not working.
I think there was four quarterbacks, if I remember correctly, and I'm trying to look for it too, but I think there were four quarterbacks that went in the top 10.
I'll look at the break. Yeah.
So if you guys want to continue to talk some football, we're here for you. Lots of other games to talk about in the NFL and the way it shook out with the playoffs and everything else. And, of course, the Rockets, who had a little bit of a rough spot this weekend. They play tonight against the San Antonio Spurs. So plenty to get to, and if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, join us. Be a suspect for the day or hopefully longer. HRNP listener line, 713-780-3776. Call, text, or hit us on Twitter. Hour number two around the corner, ESPN 97.5.